I'm Christine Sandy, and I'm the Program Director of the Rural Health Information Hub, and I'd like to welcome you to today's webinar. And we're happy to be doing this webinar on rural definitions in partnership with the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy. We have provided a PDF copy of the presentation on the RHI Hub website, and that's accessible through that URL that's on your screen. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our speakers for today's webinar. First is Sarah Heppner. Sarah serves as the Associate Director of the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy in the Health Resources and Services Administration of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. In that role, Sarah provides programmatic policy and operational support for the office. Sarah has been with FORHP since 2012, serving as the Research Coordinator, the Deputy Director of the Office of the Advancement for Telehealth, and the Director of the Policy Research Division. Our next speaker will be Steve Hirsch. Steve is the semi-retired rural guru with FORHP, and he has worked for FORHP for over 20 years, and prior to that was an information specialist at the Rural Information Center's Health Services. He now lives in a semi-rural area of Maryland. And we'll also hear from Greta Stuhlsetz. She's a statistician with FORHP, where she supports data activities for the office, including analysis, evaluation, and visualizations. She has worked for the federal government since 2012 and has previously worked for a research and capacity building center in Kansas. And with that, I'll turn it over to Sarah.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks to my colleagues Steve and Greta for inviting me to be part of their presentation. I wanted to start by just setting the stage a little bit for this webinar and making sure that everyone knows who we are and why we care about rural definitions. So we are all part of the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, or FORHP, which was created by Congress in 1987. Technically, we were just the Office of Rural Health Policy when we were created. And our office plays two main roles. The first is to administer grant programs designed to build healthcare capacity at the local and state levels. Our grants are designed to strengthen health networks, enhance healthcare delivery in rural communities, provide technical assistance and support to rural hospitals, and to address barriers to treatment for substance use disorders. The second is to act as the voice for rural across HHS by coordinating activities related to rural healthcare within the Department of Health and Human Services. We have a department-wide responsibility for analyzing the possible effects of policy on residents of rural communities. And woven into both of these roles is a need to understand the numerous federal and state level definitions of rural that have been created over the years. As part of our office's larger efforts to support rural communities and other rural stakeholders, we provide technical assistance on what all of these various ways to define rural actually mean. So today, two of those experts, Steve and Greta, are going to provide some history and some explanation to a few of the most common definitions that are currently in play. So without further ado, let me turn things over to Steve. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Sarah, for the intro. And thanks, Christine and the RHI Hub staff for making sure I got online and am able to do this. Why do rural definitions matter? Sarah just kind of covered that. Federal program funding often goes to places that have the most population so that larger numbers get more resources. There are programs, however, that are targeted for rural populations. And those have to rely on some kind of criteria to target the funding. So the way rural is defined can determine who's eligible to receive federal resources. And this is a newspaper story that appeared on the front page of the Washington Post a little over 10 years ago. And if you can read the fine print, Lenore is a small town in Western North Carolina with 18,000 people. Is it rural? The U.S. government has an answer, yes, no, and it depends. Yes, yes, no, 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 no. The reporter identified at least 15 official definitions of the word rural that are applied by the federal government, and they're probably more than that. That's a low number. And one of the reasons there are so many different definitions is that some of them are statutory. Congress might write into a law and specify how rural should be defined. And others are programmatic, that is, that the programs are left to decide how to identify what's rural and what's not, and therefore how to direct resources. And there are good reasons that there may be different definitions used by various agencies, depending on what the program is aiming to do and how large the population is that they want to help. One of the few things that's written in the Constitution that the government has to do is perform a census every 10 years. And it's Article 1, Section 2. And it says they started immediately with the start of the U.S. Soon after the Constitution was ratified, and have done it every 10 years since then. And so we have a really good snapshot of what the U.S. population looks like every 10 years since 1790. And occasionally I've seen some people who seem to believe that the founders wrote into the Constitution some protections to make sure that rural voters wouldn't be overwhelmed by the mass of urban voters in the US, but that's something I find extremely unlikely, if not impossible. And next slide, I'll be able to show you why. The blue line is the urban population of the U.S., and the red line is the rural population of the U.S., and these numbers are based not on how people were classified at the time, but it's a retroactive look back done by the Census Bureau. But easily, only 5% of the population of the U.S. was considered urban in 1790. 95% of the population was rural. And really, that is the way that ever since civilization started, that the overwhelming number of people did not live in large cities or even large towns. They lived in rural areas because they had to produce food that they could eat. When you have a scale here that runs from under 3 million to over 300 million, essentially, starting in 1790, the urban population doesn't even show up. Back then, 200,000 people might have been considered rural out of a population of almost 4 million in 1790. And it isn't until about 1830 that you can even see the beginning of the urban population starting to show up on this graph. And by 1920, though, the urban population exceeds the rural population, the first time that it went over 50% of the population. And after that, obviously, the urban population surges by a huge amount, so that you have 80% of the population is rural by 2010 or 2000, and the urban population continues to grow. But one of the interesting things to note is that around 1980, the rural population is classified by the Census Bureau, settles in around 60 million and stays there through 2010. So a good 30 years, the rural population didn't really shrink in overall numbers, but it didn't grow either. It was the urban population that surged. And then in 2020, due to some changes, mostly that the Census Bureau made in how they define rural, which we'll discuss later, the population grows by a sudden 6 million people up to 66 million as classified after the last census. So what happened? Why did the urban population surge in such a way in comparison to the rural population? And the answer is agricultural productivity. In 1870, almost half of people who worked in agriculture. And by 1980, just 4% of employed people were in agriculture, and each one supplied food for nearly 70 more people beyond that. So it's a huge, huge change in agricultural productivity that enabled people to leave rural areas if they wanted to leave rural areas, or perhaps had to leave rural areas because jobs were no longer available in agriculture with so much more productivity. Just to give you an idea, in 1910, 12 million people worked on farms. And by 2000, that number had shrunk by a huge margin down to 1.6 million. So about 90%, 96% of farm work had farm workers no longer, the people were no longer required to work on farms. So the urban population took off as agricultural productivity allowed and farm machinery allowed people to leave the farms and go elsewhere and find jobs. So the Census Bureau, and this is from a publication on the Census Bureau's website, began identifying urban places following the 1870, 1880, and 1890 censuses. And what they were doing was looking at towns with at least 2,500 people and classifying them as urban. And then everything else is considered rural. And in large part, that's how the Census Bureau continues to identify urban and rural. Everything that's not considered urban is rural. They're not really defining what rural is. It's more a definition by exclusion. So anything that's not urban is considered rural. And why did they pick towns of 2,500 people? And I'm not sure that they know exactly why the Census Bureau around that time defined a population cutoff of 2,500 people, other than they probably considered any town that had 2,500 people as having a sufficient base of population to support any needed services. Whereas today, we would think of a town of 2,500 people as being a tiny, small place. That continued to be used essentially as the basic definitions. Through 1950, they always were considering incorporated places. So anything outside of the city limits became rural. And for towns with 2,500 or more, and those with over 50, those were considered urban. But beginning in 1950, the census realized that there were suburbs growing up around large cities. And these suburbs were integrated with the city, even if they were not within the city limit. So they began to look at population density and to, as long as the population density did not fall below 1,000 people per square mile, they would consider it to be urban. And they also considered places with population density as low as 500 people per square mile because of parkland, schools, commercial or retail or industrial areas could be included within the urban area. So in below the 50,000, they did not apply this density screen or to areas around those towns. So anything from 2,500 up to 49,999, it was still within the city limits that was considered urban and everything outside was considered rural. So with the 1990 census and with technological advancements in computing power, they could now apply the density criteria across every kind of town in the US from 2,500 or more people. They could look at density surrounding those towns and include urbanized areas outside of the city limits. And so that began to happen in 1990. With 2000, the Census Bureau began to distinguish two different kinds of urban areas. So they had urbanized areas that have at least 50,000 and went up to however far it went, and urban clusters, which had a core that started at 2,500 people but had fewer than 50,000 people. Now, the Rural Health Clinic Program, as Congress wrote it, identified that rural health clinics could be sited in areas that were not urbanized. So urban clusters could be considered rural for the purposes of siting a rural health clinic. There are criteria for siting rural health clinics that they be located in a HIPAA health professional shortage area. But in essence, any town under 50,000, any urbanized core that had less than 50,000 could be the site of a rural health clinic. And that allowed many towns to have them within their town limits. Sort of counterintuitively, if you can see, there's pink area here, which represents the urbanized areas of the United States, and there are green dots, which represent the urban clusters, so towns, urban cores of under 50,000 people. You may notice that there's lots of white space. That's all the rural area of the United States. Most of the United States, by far, is rural by the Census Bureau's definition. Most of the area of the United States, 80% of the people in the US live in the green dots in the pink area. So that's only less than 5% of the land area of the United States, but over 95% of the land area of the United States is considered rural by the Census Bureau. And that includes some suburban area that doesn't reach the population density. So pretty quickly, you can get under 1,000 or 500 people per square mile. Now, the Office of Management and Budget at the White House delineates metropolitan and micropolitan statistical areas. They started out only doing metropolitan areas. And back in essentially 1949, the core areas had to have 50,000 people. The difference between what the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, does and what Census does is that OMB is designating whole counties. Census is using much smaller areas, census blocks, as the building block to develop urban areas. But if a county is part of a metro area, the whole county becomes considered metro, without any regard to how densely populated it is or pretty much any other considerations currently. So that the Grand Canyon is my favorite example. The Grand Canyon is a metropolitan area because it's in a county that has Flagstaff, Arizona, in the southern part of the county. Starting really with 2000, which is when they began to designate micropolitan areas in addition to the metro areas. So they began to talk about core-based statistical areas. So there are two types of core-based statistical areas: the metro areas that have a core population of 50,000 or more, and then micropolitan areas that start with a core population of 10,000, but less than 50,000. And they work similarly. They take the core county that has the urban core, and then they look at commuting patterns to look at which counties are economically integrated with the core area and build out from the central counties. So there are outlying counties and there are central counties within both metropolitan and micropolitan areas. And the criteria for qualifying as a central county of a core-based area is at least 50% of the population, or has some of a large slice of the urbanized air population within the county. The outlying counties are more or less based on commuting patterns, so that at least 25% of their workers are commuting into the central area, or workers from the central area are commuting out into outlying counties. So this is how the metro areas look back in 1950. It's interesting to note that there are several states that don't have any metropolitan area, states like Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, for example, don't have any metropolitan areas. And one of the things that also is interesting is that if you look at Southern California, the Los Angeles metro area stretches all the way from LA to the borders of Nevada and Arizona. And one of the reasons for that is that San Bernardino County is in that large black metro area. And San Bernardino County has about 20,000 square miles in area, larger than the state of Delaware. In fact, it's about 10 times larger than the state of Delaware. And so a metro area, when you get out in the eastern part of San Bernardino County, you're sort of out in Death Valley area where there are very few people living. So again, by including the whole county, your OMB is getting what isn't just rural, but maybe considered frontier or practically unpopulated areas. And sorry about the map being divided in half, but that's how I found it. By 1980, every state had some metro area, even Alaska did so. And as you notice, the metro areas have grown and are much larger and cover a lot more area of the United States, but still not the majority of the area. But even in 1980, there's far less, there's still far more non-metro area than there is metro area. I mentioned some ways that metro and non-metro are sort of counterintuitive. And one is that you can have commuting in reverse. And this is from an article by Ken Jennings, who, yes, is the host of Jeopardy now. But he wrote about Kalawao, which is the smallest county in the United States by area. It's 12 square miles. It's part of Maui County in Hawaii. And Kalawao is partly parkland and partly a Hansen's disease colony. And it's extremely isolated. But Kalawao is part of reverse commuting. People are leaving the urbanized core to go work in Kalawao, and that is pulling it into the metropolitan area. It's not that people leave Kalawao and commute into the city. And there are other examples of this, and one I know of is in Idaho, where a very sparsely populated county has a nuclear plant, and people are leaving the urban core to go work out in the nuclear facility, and that is pulling the whole county into the urban core. So I'm going to turn it over to Greta to take it from this point.
Thanks, Steve. So Steve did a beautiful job of explaining kind of the background and also what's happened in the past and how we got to where we are today. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about kind of the more recent history and what we have going into 2020. So with the 2020, we're past 2020, but moving on with the 2020 census numbers. So with the 2020 census, there were three key changes to urban classifications, which in turn has an effect on rural classifications because as a reminder, as Steve said, generally, everything that's not designated as urban is rural. It's not necessarily something that is defined more than it is excluded, and that's where we come in. So the three changes are, first, the census is no longer differentiating between urban